welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host for this segment, Peter Dunlap Scholl. Today we'll be discussing the effects of the population churn and turnover here in Alaska. Joining me today in our studio is Scott Goldsmith, an economist and professor with UAA's Institute for Social and Economic Research. I hope you'll join the conversation as well, which you can do by calling 550-8433 here in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can email us, hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we're going to dive right in here, and I'd like to start by looking a little bit to history, which is, since contact, I think we've probably had fairly significant turnover of people that come here, trappers and soldiers, et cetera, and there have been people that stayed, but we've had so much turnover here that we've even got words for people that have been here a long time, sourdoughs, and people that are new here, chichacos. So that gives you an idea of how ingrained this phenomenon is in our state. And let's see here. So the question I have is, do you think of Alaska's home, or are you here for a short while? And let's discuss that.
Well, I've been here 36 of my 66 years, and when I first came in 75, I think like a lot of people who came during that boom period, which is when the TAPS pipeline was under construction, I thought that I'd spend a couple of years making a lot of money and having an interesting experience. And then I'd go back to a kind of a normal existence somewhere else in the U.S. I can't speak for everybody else who's here, but I think for a lot of us who came during that period of time, that was what we were expecting. And what happened was that we got seduced by Alaska, by the beauty of the state, by the excitement, by the opportunities, by the other people that we met here. And so 35 years later, there are a lot of us who came 35 years ago and are still here.
And qualify as a sourdough now, I guess.
And I hope that I don't know that I qualify as a sourdough. Yet today, I think I have some of the characteristics maybe, but not all of them.
Okay, well, let's get back to that later. That'd be interesting to see what the characteristics of sourdough are. I know that Mike Carey has said his dad used to say, his dad was a famous trapper up in Fairbanks. And he said a sourdough is anybody that's been here long enough to have their brains frozen. So, but you've spoken in the past of a steep learning curve for people that come to Alaska. And what sort of things do they have to learn here that they're not used to?
Well, I'm an economist, so I tend to think about what's unusual or unique about our economy compared to other places that people have likely come from. And there are a lot of things about Alaska that are so different that it's hard for people first to understand, but then once they have been here for a while, they sort of take them for granted. And probably the most curious thing about us is that we have an Alaska Permanent Fund dividend. So instead of paying taxes to the state government once a year, on April 15th, we get a check from the government every year in the fall. And for probably most Alaskans today who have either come to Alaska since the 1980s or who are relatively young, they don't really have a historical understanding of why we have a dividend, where it came from, what the circumstances were surrounding the creation of the dividend. So it, not that it's a mystery to them because they know that it's there, but thinking about what really is behind it is something that a lot of people probably don't have a good sense of. The other thing that I think is critical is the fact that our economy is so dependent on petroleum. Mm-hmm. We're really not a one-trick pony because the federal government is also very important here, but it's hard for people to get their heads around being new to the state that if we didn't have petroleum and we didn't have the federal government, most of us wouldn't be here.
That's true. And I wonder how many people do come just because of the dividend, or how big of the fact that have we looked at that and seen. I know there's people that have said that there's a guy we interviewed once who was, he had a trailer park, and people would come up and say, well, we're going to make the deposit with our dividend that we're going to have. And it's like, well, you got to be here for a year before that happens. And have you noticed that?
Well, there's certainly anecdotal evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one good example. Another good example is, was it about 7 or 8 years ago, the Papa Pilgrim incident?
Oh, yeah, I was thinking about that as you were doing this.
He brought his, 16 children to Alaska to homestead. And
and they got a stake up in Wrangell St. Elias Park.
Yeah, and they ended up getting dividends after a year, and that amounted to a significant part of their income, I'm sure, because they were trying to subsist and live off the dividend and public programs. And so there is some evidence of that. Nobody has looked at the patterns of migration with that in mind to try to identify, how many people are lured to the states specifically because of the dividend. And that it's a tricky thing to do because there are many other reasons why somebody could be lured to the state as well. The fact that we don't have an income tax.
That's true.
The fact that if you're a low-income senior, there are opportunities to take advantage of some attractive programs
and so on and so forth.
So, the dividend is one monetary reason why people could be lured to the state, but there are others, and then, of course, there are many other non-monetary reasons as well.
Yep. And to look at the other side of that, people leaving, it's because there's certainly opportunity here in the state. There has been for a long time. In fact, right now, it's one of the states that's doing better economically than certainly most of the rest of the country is. And often you'll see this pattern where we're doing badly and a lot of people will move out. And then the outside economy, which seems to be somewhat countercyclical to Alaska, will drive people here looking for work. Mm-hmm. So what kind of – does that have much in the way of social effects, you think, or is that – sort of thing that is
First of all, it is an effect that we've seen for a long time, and it gets back to my point that petroleum is so important. You know, when the price of petroleum is high, that's good for Alaska's economy, and that tends to both draw people in and keep them here, at the same time that it's bad for the rest of the U.S. and vice versa. In terms of what that means socially, it's a little harder to say because people come to Alaska or stay in Alaska probably for two diametrically opposed reasons. One is they come because they're drawn to something, to the opportunities for employment, to the opportunities for recreation, and so on, or they're running away from something. They're trying to get away from a bad job or a bad marriage or who knows what.
And or so, some people are scored both those different categories and are running away from something and to something, I suppose.
Well, that could be too. But so you do tend to get, I think, in Alaska, a kind of a bipolar distribution of people, and what that means for society. Is an interesting question.
Well, if you have some thoughts about that, you're welcome to call us. This number is 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. Or you can send us an email, which we'll try to read on the air if we get that from you. And you can tell us maybe why you came, or if you have some experiences with losing people to the outside, the great big bright lights out there. We'd be interested in hearing about that as well. I have a personal stake in this, I have to say, because, so I was explaining to Scott right before the show started, I've got 6 brothers and sisters. We were all brought up here, and they all left. So I don't know, was it something I said? It's one of the things that I think about often is, you fly to Alaska, and you cross this incredible wilderness for like 3 hours. You look down, there's nothing there. So I think it takes a special kind of person to want to stay here. And to be here. And if you have thoughts about that, please call in and we'll take those on the air. And do you have a thought you were about
to? Well, you mentioned earlier on trying to define what a sourdough is versus a chichaco.
Right.
Another way to think of it is trying to define what a quote-unquote real Alaskan is.
Right, which is often in terms of length of stay here.
Right, and often it's linked to the either the dividend or some public program or some use of public resources, you know, like the fish in the
right.
in the streams or something. Who is eligible to sort of take part in Alaska?
And at what level, too?
Because at what
there's
level?
Certain privileges you have if you're here for a certain amount of time, which it's all very crazy in some ways. We're all supposed to be Americans that have all these things, but we do like to draw lines, especially in Alaska, between certain people, I think. And one of the lines we like to draw is, and it comes up if you're arguing with somebody, sooner or later they'll say, well, how long have you been in Alaska anyway?
Yeah.
And I think that there's a sense that there has to be commitment if you want to participate here. There has to be the sense that you've been here for a while, that you understand what it's like. It's not the same as New Jersey or Ohio or someplace like that. And that's, I think, what people mean by that question. It's sort of, if Albert Einstein was to come here and have an opinion on physics, pretty soon they'd be asking him, how long have you been here? And what entitles you to that opinion on physics is the way it feels sometimes. I think one of the things is that often is people are here, like you mentioned earlier, you were coming here for a few years to see how things were going to go and et cetera. I wonder if our population doesn't have the same commitment to the place in the deep way they would have to their home, in the same way they would want to take care of their home, because they're just here, like you said, to pursue opportunities or to have a good time. And I think that it's one of the things when you sit around and you say, well, let's pay for some more roads or pay for some parks. You've got to have people that are going to be here for a while that are going to see the use of that. And I wonder if that might explain the reluctance that we sometimes have to do those sort of things.
Well, one of the defining characteristics about Alaska's past is its boom-bust economic history. And that's been most recently with oil, but before that with mining and with timber and with fishing, mm-hmm. and it just goes on and on. Well, with the military presence as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the sort of background that's sort of one of the background conditions for the state, and people who have come here for economic reasons to be part of one of those booms, I think carry in the back of their minds this notion that, oh, someday the boom may go away, mm-hmm. and I may have to leave. And I think more and more we're getting beyond that. People put that out of their mind, mm-hmm. but it's certainly there.
Okay, it looks like we've got a caller here. This would be Becky, and you were going to tell us why you came to Alaska, perhaps.
Well, I was living in New York City, and a friend of mine was transferred up by her firm, and I came up with her on a visit. And I went to Woolworth's to buy some postcards, and they were something like 10 cents each, but 12 for a dollar, and I picked up 12, went to the cashier, and told her that I thought I had 12, and she didn't even count them. She just charged me for them. In New York, they don't do that.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, I was tired of living in New York, so I came up here, and my brother is here. He was here when I came. And so, you know, I've been here, and I really like it here. And right now, with all of the awful weather they're having outside. We're having great weather.
Yeah. I'd love to ask people why they came here, because there's so many great stories about that. And it's, do you have people you left behind that think you're crazy for coming this far and for living in a place that's cold, remote, dark, and...
I have brothers and sisters outside, as well as a brother here, and they've all been here at one time or another. And right now, as I said, with the severe weather they're having outside, I think they're jealous.
Scott, you have a point that you have to make?
It's interesting what you said about coming from New York. A number of years ago, I had a conversation by phone with a radio reporter from New York City who called Alaska and wanted to talk to somebody who was a real Alaskan. And you could tell from the way he was structuring his questions that he thought that I was crazy and sort of making fun of me in front of his New York City audience. Mm-hmm. And when I got off the phone with him, my reaction was, boy, I'm sure glad that more New Yorkers, present company accepted, and I can say this because my wife is from New York City too. Uh-huh. I'm certainly glad that those kind of New Yorkers don't live in Alaska and that I don't have to deal with them on a daily basis.
Well, the thing is, I'm not originally from New York. I grew up in Ohio. But the... just the impersonality of New York finally got on my nerves.
Well, thank you very much for your call. And I have to say, the first time I understood fame was when I went to New York City. I was walking down the street, and the street's about, the sidewalk is about 30 feet wide, and it's just packed with people. And I suddenly understood why a person would want to be famous, because you're just lost in this sea of humanity, which you don't have here. When you walk down the sidewalk in Anchorage, you're kind of a loony, in fact, in some ways, because nobody walks on the sidewalk. They drive their cars. But the thing is, I understood then that there is, I grew up here and wasn't used to the idea that there'd be all these people around everywhere and how overwhelming that can be. So that's one of the pluses to living here, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'll confess that I mentioned earlier that my six brothers and sisters all left. Three of them live in New York City now. So, and that brings up for me the question, why do people leave and go to places like New York, which are 100 degrees right now and baking and crawling with people and rats in the subways and gangs in the streets, et cetera, et cetera. And the answer is, I think, as we talked about earlier, it's economics. There's certain things they can do, which they can't do here when you have only one trip for your pony to do.
Well, that's certainly part of it. I mean, if you want to be a nuclear physicist, you don't have many options for a job here in Alaska. You have to go outside. And there are many other kinds of occupations where that's true as well. A lot of young people go outside because they want to see what the rest of the world has to offer. And, you know, if you have children, you know that every individual is an individual and has their own ideas about how they want to live their life. And you can't either predict or control that. And so that probably has a lot to do with why many of your siblings don't live in Alaska. They just have different notions about what's important and what they like to do.
I think that's true. And that also brings up for me another question, which is one thing that we did for many years was subsidize young children to leave the state via the loans that we would give them for their student loans for college payments. And a lot of people will go outside and they'll look around and say, well, this is really great, or it'll just be the natural thing where they have connections that they form outside and they end up going away. And that, I was very surprised when I went to my son's graduation from college, from high school, and he was part of a group that was fairly well off academically, and they asked all these kids where they were going to go to school. And almost, I would say 90% of them were going to go to Anchorage, to UAA or UAF, because of the break they're getting in tuition now. And that was just, I thought that was very significant, because these kids 20 years ago, we've all said, well, I'm going outside to Iowa State or wherever because I got a scholarship there. And there's all this great opportunity out there academically, which they don't have here. But now they're managing to corral these kids. And I would think that this program, I think, is one of the was started by the head of the university about 6 years ago, I guess. And I don't know if you've seen much of evidence of those kids coming through in your classes, but it seems like it's really substantial, the number of children that decided that they'll hang out here.
Yeah. Well, it is a very significant program. And a couple of things are going on. One is that education is becoming so expensive outside that even without this scholarship program, getting more kids by necessity having to stay home and go to UAA or other local schools. But the scholarship program has been very good in attracting more top students, and it's showing up in the classroom. I can see that there are there's a higher quality of students, and that helps everybody. Yeah. It helps the other students, and it helps the professors, and it's a good thing. Now, on the other side, I think it is important, and my own children did this. They went outside to school, and part of the reason was that it gives them an opportunity to see what the rest of the world is, that it's not all like Alaska. It's everybody's not like an Alaskan, and everybody doesn't live right next to a mountain or next to the ocean and so on. And lets them decide based on firsthand experience then where they want to live. And much to my surprise, both my daughters came back and they live in Anchorage after having spent many years outside, both of them.
Well, that's,
and that's, but that's a conscious choice on their part. And I think, as you were saying, I think that, you know, it's a 3-hour plane ride from Seattle up to Anchorage. That in itself is a sign of a real commitment. If you decide you want to live in Alaska, it requires more of a commitment, say, than probably moving from Illinois to Wisconsin.
But Alaska's always had a certain inspirational quality that will inspire commitment, I think, in people as well. It goes back to Jack London, it goes back to Robert Service, people that found a certain romance here that I think still attracts people. And I think that's one of the things that's really fascinating about the state is the kind of people that come here that want to live in that extreme area and have that commitment that you're not going to see to a place like Poughkeepsie, I guess, just to pick on New Jersey some more. I guess most of the legends about New Jersey are the kind of things that would drive you away. And we have here an email message. This person says, Peter and Scott, my late father was born and raised in the Puget Sound area. My parents left Anchorage to return to Seattle, Tacoma after a dozen years before my father was 50. Late in life, he passed at 75. My father told me he had made one major mistake, leaving Alaska. I'll not make that mistake. And that's Mr. Dale Sullen. So thank you for that. And it's too bad he's not here on the phone so we could ask him what exactly was the nature of that mistake and how the Puget Sound area doesn't measure up to Alaska. But I guess you could say it's probably the people. I think it's the main thing that makes Alaska different. We do have an extreme environment. We have, like in the middle of winter, as my friend used to say, it's cold, but at least it's dark. And it takes a certain kind of person to live through that. And you have to have certain skills, I think, as well. And it helps if you have family here, but not everybody does. Some people come here in spite of the fact that, or perhaps because of their family. I think that might be one of the things that drove my parents here from the East Coast long, long ago. It was a chance that I think for them to start fresh and not have the family hanging over them, not have the old boy network of the East Coast, which was the sort of thing that drove my father crazy. The idea that you had to be connected somewhere and, as opposed to making it on your own. And one thing about Alaska that has certainly been true for most of the time I've been here is if you're here to play, you can play. You don't have to have a lengthy resume or a whole bunch of bona fides to show people. You can just come out and say, well, yes, I'm a cartoonist, as a matter of fact, and if you hire me, I will do cartoons for you. And that is the sort of thing where if you were to try that in New York, you would be left down the hall, out the building, and into the heavy traffic there and run over by a large Mack truck, that's my guess. And that's one of the things that is really great about Alaska. I have a friend who used to say, if you want to see a great Shakespeare play, well, don't go to Alaska. But if you want to be in a Shakespeare play, come on down, folks. If you want to see a great hockey game, you're probably better off in Detroit. But if you want to play hockey, this is the place to play. So I think that it's a great place to participate. That's one of the things about Alaska that I think draws people here. And I don't know if you could say that of other states. Did you have a thought there, Scott, or was that just a little pause there?
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you've hit on something that is an important characteristic of the Alaska experience, and that is its openness to allow people to be themselves without having to conform to some sort of external structure. And part of that is being able to participate in all sorts of things that you might not otherwise even thought you could do.
Right. It's like you have to do them because there's nobody else that will do them. At some point, it's like the ball comes to you and you're running down the field all of a sudden because you're the only person there to catch it. That's actually been my experience in this.
Well, yes. When I came here in the mid-70s, there was a saying that if you weren't a state commissioner by the time you were 30, there was something wrong with you.
Uh-huh.
And what that meant, of course, was that there were lots of opportunities opening up because it was like there were more jobs than there were people to fill them.
And I think that maybe I didn't think of this turnover as a bad thing because it's sort of alienating to have people around that you're not able to really form long-term commitments to because you don't know if they're going to be here in a year. But perhaps it's a good thing that we have all these people that come in with fresh ideas, perhaps. And it seems like there could be a benefit to this as well as a downside.
Well, definitely. What the pattern has been in the past is that churning of the population means young people are coming in and older people are going out, so that you always are getting that new blood and the old tired sourdoughs are retiring to Seattle or somewhere else. I think that's happening less and less as mm-hmm. time goes by. And in other words, certainly the seniors leaving the state when they retire, that phenomenon is declining. More and more seniors mm-hmm. are choosing to stay in Alaska. But you'll always get turnover with the young people moving in, and that's a good thing because they're making a conscious choice to come.
Mm-hmm.
So they're bringing something with them, hopefully.
And I think it's interesting as the world becomes more mobile, perhaps more places will be somewhat like Alaska in that everybody will be sort of a newcomer in some ways because people are more able to go to opportunity now wherever it is.
Possibly. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Yeah.
So we're talking about Alaska and the population turnover with UAA Professor Scott Goldsmith. Are you new to Alaska and finding it tough going? Are you an old timer who has seen them come and go? Please call in with your questions or observations. The number is 550-8433. In Anchorage, or 1-888, that's one with three eights, 353-5752 statewide. Or you can reach us by email, hometown@alaskapublic.org. For Hometown Alaska, on KSK Anchorage, this is Peter Dunlap Scholl.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Hello, and welcome back to Hometown on Alaska, or on KSKA Anchorage. This is Peter Dunlap-Scholl, and we're talking with our guest, UAA Economics Professor Scott Goldsmith. If you'd like to join our conversation on Alaska population churn or turnover, call us at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. Or we're taking your emails as well at hometown@alaskapublic.org. You have a thought there, Scott?
You know, one of the interesting things about this notion of population churn that we all think is so important is that we can count how many people are new to the state in a year, and we can count at the end of the year how many people have left the state, but we don't know how many of those people who came also left at the end of the year. In other words, we don't know how much churning is going on within that small group. And somebody described it once as sort of like the waves in the ocean lapping on the shore. You know, they bring in a lot of stuff. I don't want to say flotsam and jetsam.
You just did, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid I did, but you get my drift.
Right.
But when the wave goes out, then it carries most of that flotsam and jetsam back out with it, and it just leaves on the beach a small share, and that share that it leaves may stay forever. So the amount of turnover in the population, it's a little hard to get your hands around. And then, of course, we have such a large military population in the state compared to other places, and of course that's always turning over in a couple of years' time. Although once military personnel come up here, they seem to fall in love with the place.
Right.
So our veteran population
is enormous. Yes.
Is enormous. Yeah. But that's a part of the population that's pretty distinct from the rest that's turning over all the time, the military. And then, of course, in the summertime, you know, several industries expand dramatically.
Right. I was going to say, we have a subset of people that are constantly cycling in and out.
Yeah, the fishing industry and the tourism industry in particular, you get a tremendous influx of people in the summertime to work in those industries. And, of course, they're temporary and they leave at the end of the season. And then, you know, everybody likes to pound on the oil industry for all the outside workers that they hire, you know, from Texas and Oklahoma, and they come in on the planes and they make the big bucks and they leave. So there's some of that. It's not exactly churning, but it's outside people who are here for part of the time. But the point is that there's a sort of a core of people who are here the year round. Permanently, the real Alaskans, the sourdoughs, but trying to figure out exactly how many of us fall into that category, it's a little tricky to do.
Even in that category, there would be, I think, a subset called the snowbirds who come up for the summer, like you said, like the other people who, they've lived here, they've made their lives here, they have roots here, but they can't take the winters because they're old and they fall down, and it's dark and it's scary, and it's much more appealing to spend that. Those times in Florida, I think.
Right. So they have two homes. They
That's
have a
right.
home here and a home somewhere else.
I've never figured that out how that is possible, but apparently it is. And now we have a guest, caller Heidi. You want to tell us about what happened to you and your four siblings?
Hi.
Hey there.
My name's Marie, and I was...
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was kind of like Heidi.
Yeah, you weren't... You thought somebody was there with you, but...
I was wondering, do you find that people find themselves stuck up here? I have four siblings, and all of them have left, and I seem to just still be here. Do you find that people get stuck here and can't leave, or get stuck here and just don't have any means of getting out because it is so expensive to leave?
Okay. So you're saying they're stuck here not because they're so in love with it, but because they just don't have the ability to leave. Yeah. I do know there's like a class of people, and I've known this ever since I was in grade school, that are here against their will. There are people that have come here because their husband is a fisherman nut and loves to fish, and there are people that come here because their job transferred them up here and they can't stand the weather or whatever.
Right, or the darkness.
The darkness, I think, is particularly tough for a lot of people. But I don't know that it's a very large class. Most of them leave is what they do. I think that you should probably save up your permit funds and buy a plane ticket is my best recommendation.
Yeah, if you think historically, it used to be the case that retirees would make the argument that they had to leave the state because they couldn't afford to live here. And then back in the mid-80s, if you were here then, you remember the state went through a terrible recession when the price of oil crashed. And virtually overnight, we lost about 10% of the population. So, and that was people who didn't have jobs and whose the value of their houses went south.
Yep.
And somehow they managed to figure out how to leave.
Yeah, they threw their keys to the bank, I think is what a lot of them did. And some people would be like, you say they were stuck because they were underwater, but they wouldn't leave their houses. I do know people that were like that.
Yeah, but a lot of them were underwater and they left.
Yep, they swam
and,
off, I guess.
Yeah, and we don't know where they are.
No, but they're not real Alaskans.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks for your
thank
call.
Thank you.
And looks like we've got Pimmy here. And what would you like to tell us, Pimmy?
Well, I came up from Seattle after I had already become a person, and I went to Bethel. So my Alaska was the bush, and I realized after a while I'd never lived in a small city, small town. And, you know, it's a lot of us come here. We've already made our mistakes somewhere else, and we've been able to arrive as the expert in what we do. And in small towns, you don't get to shake off the weirdo or whatever you were in grade school or high school. And so I think a lot of us that came here kind of took advantage of, you know, kind of starting new and being kind of the expert in the top of our class or whatever. And so it's kind of like you do get to start fresh when you come up here from somewhere else. And but I don't know, I was in Yupik world for my first 8 years, and I don't know if I could ever call myself a, you know, a lifetime. I've been here 30 years. I don't think that's long enough yet.
Well, I think that a lot of people say that Anchorage is not part of Alaska, but you can see it from there. And so
right.
I guess it might be presumptuous of some of us to say we've lived in Alaska all our lives if we've only lived in Anchorage.
Uh-huh.
But I think right. 30 years, boy, that seems like it should qualify you to me, but I guess...
Yeah, I'm getting close.
is it your...
But the one time I did attempt to leave, because I didn't think this is where I wanted to, you know, totally put down roots.
Right.
After 2 weeks, somebody asked me where I was from, and I couldn't say Alaska. I said Seattle, but I hadn't lived in Seattle for 8 years, and I didn't feel I'd earned the right to say I was an Alaskan, but I've had every permanent dividend, so I guess that makes me Alaskan.
I think you're legally an Alaskan if you've been able to qualify for one of those. So if it's like a, well, I'm not going to bring that, but I think that is an interesting question always. What is a true Alaskan, and does living here make you one? Apparently not, in your book.
Well, I don't know. I think someone who... My children were born here. My daughter has even more of a claim because she was born in the Native Hospital out in Bethel. So she, and I almost called her Bethel, but my husband said, no way, but.
Going back to making mistakes in small towns and stuff.
Yeah. After having our bush experience, we don't think Alaska, you know, lives and ends on the highway system. So.
Uh-huh. That's uh-huh. very true.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for your call.
Thanks.
Bye.
I think it's interesting, this notion of the small town. And in a sense, even Anchorage is a small town.
Right.
Sometimes I think it's like being back in high school, in the sense that when you're in high school, at least in my high school, everybody was thrown together. I mean, you didn't just hang out with kids who were exactly like you. You interacted with, with kids from the other side of the tracks and people that you would never interact with in other circumstances. And I think that's unlike what you, Or that's what you find in Anchorage and smaller places today. I mean, certainly I spend a lot of my time with the colleagues that I know from work or who are sort of similar to me. But at the same time, I do run into and interact with a lot of different kind of people that I don't think I would if I were in a larger city. And the other thing that leads to is the fact that you have to be on better behavior than you would be if you were in New York City, for example, because you might meet the parents of your children's friends in one setting, and you might think they were total jerks, but you'd have to be polite to them. Because next week here in Anchorage, they might be sitting across from you at a conference table in some business situation.
Right, or they might be sitting at your soccer game or something like that.
Or they could be sitting at your soccer game, or they could be in the next tent in the next campground.
Right.
Or, you know, standing next to you at your favorite fishing hole. And so it's fascinating that you run into these same people in different settings, but it does mean that you have to be a little bit more polite, I think, than otherwise.
Well, we have Stu on the line. He'd like to tell us a little bit about relationships and language and how that is unique here.
Thanks for taking my call, Peter. I missed the first half of your show, but one of the lines as someone who's been born and raised here that I hear a lot is people saying, oh, the long winters. And I always think, relative to what? For example, when I went to Lower 48, the first time I remember going to Lower 48 was I was like 8, and my God, how can I live here? It is
right.
Damn dark.
Right. Oh
summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like you know, you couldn't walk outside without a lamp or a headlamp or something, you know. So to me, it seems very strange. And then they had those animals called snakes.
Oh right. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the spiders were really bad, and. So you have all these phobias with things you don't know anything about, right? So it's kind of the opposite. But what I was going to say is I sure wish I knew the secret formula growing up here to identify who would be the people to stay and continue having friendships with your whole life and who were the people that are going to disappear to who knows where. Hello?
Yeah, and did you come up with the formula there, or is that still
I hate to say it, but there is an ethnic aspect of it, and what I've found is the Russians who have come up here are so in tune with the outdoors, unlike almost any of my friends from Lower 48. They know the mushrooms, they know the berries, they have their own methods of hunting and fishing that I don't think fish and game has even got sight of yet, and they aren't leaving, and they won't leave. It's you know, they know where they've been, and they like it a lot better here, and this climate to them is like ducks to water. And the same with the Korean folks here. They network really well. They're very good at finding mushrooms. And these people I've found myself networking with, and I'm very comfortable that them and their kids are going to be here.
So the key is mushrooms.
Yeah, well, you know, they know how to find food here.
If they can identify King Balit, then you're in good shape. You can have a relationship with them that's going to last, and they're not going to break your heart by getting on a plane someday and going south with their mushrooms.
Yep.
Well, that's pretty interesting. You have some thoughts in language, or is that?
Well, no, it was just the aspect that so many people who are from the cultural group from Lower 48 describe things in Lower 48 terms, even when they're second and third generation sometimes, like the long winters.
You know, right.
If you're born and raised here, there aren't long winters, there are winters.
Right.
And you go to that Lower 48, it's dark summers and bright winter, or, you know.
Right.
So it's... You know, it's all culturally relative to where you're from, and after a while, you get tired of correcting people, and you just, you know. But yeah, that's the way it is. I sometimes feel like maybe people who are from here, who do have their families here and stuff, maybe there is a certain amount of resentment, but the resentment only lasts about 5 years, if you know what I mean.
Well, thanks for your call. That's. I hadn't thought of that mushroom test. I'm going to start using that, I think. That's very useful.
Okay, thanks. Hey, I love your show. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.
That's an interesting insight into the fact that how you interpret things based on where you're standing. You know,
right.
One of my experiences has been that we have a lot of relatives outside of Alaska, and they always think that it's very easy for us to jump on a plane and fly for 3 hours to visit them. But the thought of them getting on a plane and flying 3 hours to visit us is just outside of the realm of the possibility for them. Somehow it's much shorter distance for us to go down and visit them.
It's all downhill. So
than the distance from them to come uphill to Alaska.
Yeah, it's much more effort.
That's interesting.
Well, that actually brings up something for me, which is one thing that we do have a lot more of here is diversity. He talked about the Russians that are here, and we have every kind of group from the east and from the west. We have 100 languages or something like that are spoken in our school district, and I think that is amazing that we seem to be attracting real Alaskans from places that we didn't even know there were real Alaskans there.
That's an interesting way to think about it. We certainly have become much more diverse in the last 10 or 20 years, although we've always been very diverse. I think if you
outside of Anchorage, I think for sure, but inside Anchorage, it's been. It was overwhelmingly, I think, a Caucasian population until, for instance, when I was in high school, there was hardly anybody from the bush that would move to our schools, and hardly any African Americans. It was just, it was a tiny, tiny area of the population. But now it's much more diverse, and I think that is certainly great if you want to go get some chow somewhere. There's like two Tibetan restaurants here in town. It's like, how can that be?
That's right.
That's one of the things that makes for a richer place.
And what's interesting about that is that that diversity is concentrated in the younger age groups. So over time we're going to see more of that diversity as those young real Alaskans from other places start to mature.
Right.
And B, we don't really have a full sense yet of how important that component of the population is because they are so young. They're still in school all day, so we don't see them unless you are a teacher yourself. But in the school system, it's been many years now, I think, that through self-reporting, more than 50% of the students report themselves as some sort of minority.
Mm-hmm. And you could even be several minorities, or it depends on what...
Well, that's right.
How you want to report.
That's another level of diversity, if you will.
So it looks like we've got another call here. This is Bill. And Bill, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to mention that a lot of people that have lived up here a lot of years or lived up here all their lives feel that they're not fit to live anywhere else.
That was actually something I was going to talk about later, yeah. That is very interesting. And in what sense would you say that is the most, what's the common denominator there? What is it that makes them unfit to live elsewhere?
Well, it's just you're comfortable where you're at here. I mean, as far as you know your people, you know your clientele, you know what's going on. So it's real easy to... as has been mentioned before, you can do anything you want, pretty much, you know, as far as the only thing holding you back is you.
I think that's true in a lot of ways. And one of the things that happens is if you live here long enough, you've got to develop certain survival skills. Like, you got to learn to do something in the winter that is like skiing or skating or it has some way of getting through those long, dark winters. Pardon me, earlier caller.
Cabin fever can get you.
Yeah, so, and then you become attached to those activities, and it's like hard for me to imagine living somewhere where I couldn't have all of these great ski trails in town that are lit up at night, so you can ski at night if you want. Or it's hard for me to imagine living someplace where you don't look up and there's a moose in your yard from time to time, and your dog is going crazy, and it's just like, how could you live in a place that didn't have...
See the stars.
Yeah,
you know,
or...
A lot of places, there's too many lights, and then you can't see the stars. And lower 48 and such. So it's nice.
I agree. Well, thanks for your call, Bill.
Hey, sure thing. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. I have to say, thinking about that winter question, it's just winter, some people say. And from time to time, you hear like the people on Prairie Home Companion saying, well, it's winter in Minnesota and it's dark and it's cold. And as Alaskan, I just have to say, cry me a river, baby. It's like you want to see dark and you want to see cold. It's happening in Fairbanks. In fact, we had this great story in the paper about 10 years ago where it was very cold up in Fairbanks and It was so cold that we thought it was worth sending a reporter up there. And so David Hewlin went up there, and he's walking around, and he's just freezing and barely keeping all his digits warm. He walks in this convenience store, and he says to this woman, "Well, why do you live here after all?" And you look outside, and she looks at him, and she goes, "Well, I live here because..." And then there's like a pause. and she's trying to think of what form of madness drove her here is what she was trying to think of at that point. And there does seem to be people that just aren't meant to live here, and they don't have any interest in skiing, or they don't want to go fishing, or they don't hunt, or they, like I said, were brought here against their will by their spouse, who was a nut, to do these things. And I don't know if that is common in other states, having grown up here, but I can't imagine a person saying, "I got to get out of Iowa," like they do from here.
But don't you think it's true anywhere that there's a certain share of the population, and might be relatively big, that just are wherever they are, and they don't really think about that moving is important, or they don't see that as an opportunity or as an option, that they're just living day to day. There's a share of the population.
It never occurs to them that, it's like, supposedly there's people that never leave the borough of Queens in New York that just never get out of their neighborhood. And that's not a problem. If you're in Alaska, you're probably way out of your neighborhood. Unless you're an indigenous person, you're from somewhere else for the most part. We've got an email here, and this is from Esther, who says that my husband was stationed in Alaska, and we both have fallen in love with the scenery, the small towns, and the sense of community. If we could each get our 5 siblings and parents to move here, we would love to stay forever. His term here is about to end, and it will be a bit of melancholy that we'll be heading back to our home state. And that's from Esther and Palmer. So we'll miss you, Esther, and thanks for that email. And I guess I haven't thought too much about what it'd be like to have to leave. And so often you go outside and you're asked to be an ambassador for the state in some ways. You have to explain our politics, or if we live in the igloo, or if we have a husky or a polar bear that we live with. And that's one of the things that goes along with being Alaskan that I don't think goes along with being from Utah. Although you might have to explain, I guess, if you're from Utah, what the Mormon Church is up to. But you're held responsible in a lot of ways for what goes on here, in ways you're not if you're from New York, I don't think. To pick on New York again.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I think that, Alaska is very small in population, but we're big in size, and we talk about how we're bigger than Texas.
Yep.
And so our presence on the national scene, I think, is greater than our population would warrant.
Right.
And, the most obvious thing that we have to explain these days when we go outside is, who is Sarah Palin?
Right. And
I have to say, I had an interesting conversation last week. My wife is Chinese, and we were entertaining some of her relatives from Beijing. And we happened to go through Wasilla, and they wanted to know what was special about Wasilla. We said, "Well, this is where Sarah Palin is from." And they said, "Who is Sarah Palin?"
And that was very refreshing, I imagine.
It was very refreshing because we didn't have to go through and explain.
Well, I remember when she was nominated, I was in a remote part of New Hampshire, actually, where it was not easy to get news. And suddenly, there's all these messages on my phone from people that want me to explain who this person is and why she's suddenly the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party. And that was, it's the sort of thing where Alaska has always managed to play a bigger part in people's minds than other parts of the country in a lot of ways. I think California, people think of the Golden West and stuff like that. It has a certain amount of panache to it. And New England, of course, has a personality. But Alaska is like this outlier. It's not even connected. And it's like where people go often, as we said, when they're going to get away from something, or they're going to something like the fabulous mountains they want to climb or something like that. And that's always been our heritage in a way, and I hope it always will be. I think that there's a great quote from John McPhee in Coming into the Country where he describes Anchorage. As somebody took a cookie cutter and plopped it on Albuquerque and lifted it up, brought it way over all those mountains and just dropped it here. But the fact is, those mountains are right there. And if you have a Borders, if you have a Taco Bell sign against it, it's still going to be against those mountains. And I think it's always going to be a certain difficulty for some people at getting away from that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here's a question for you, Peter. What if we were sitting in a radio station in Honolulu and we're having this conversation about Hawaii?
Mm-hmm.
How would the conversation about who's a real Hawaiian be different from the conversation we've been having today?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure what the answer would be, but I think that Hawaii is certainly, there are the indigenous Hawaiians that would all consider themselves real Hawaiians. And in fact, we have probably a lot of things to say to those of us that have come over by boat from the other shore, as opposed from Polynesia or someplace like that. And I think that's true of Anchorage in Alaska as well. There certainly we say that what's going to happen when our one trick is over, we'll all go back home, is what a lot of people say. But there are people here that are home.
Mm-hmm.
They have a long tradition of living here. And they will always, they're not going to go anywhere. And that's going to be, I think there's people that love the state that will interact with it in ways that are impossible to interact with any other state. I think of Dick Griffith walking through Anaktuvuk Pass in the middle of winter. That has got to be real Alaskan. I mean, the guy froze his rear end. And that's, he had to eat his dog, I think. I think if you've frozen your rear end and eaten your dog in Anaktuvuk Pass, that's what qualifies you as a real Alaskan.
Hmm.
But as far as a real Hawaiian, I don't know if they even had that argument over that. I have a friend who's actually an anthropologist who worked there for years. I'll have to ask him that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. That would be interesting. Because we tend to think that as Alaskans we're unique, but
right.
You know, there are many things that are similar other than the weather between
right.
Alaska and Hawaii.
Even Alaska and Texas, although we hate to admit it, I think there's much that is similar. And in fact, much of Texas has moved here in the last 20 years, from what I can tell. So if they were going to stay, that's fine. I think they're real Alaskans. I don't have any problem with that. Mm-hmm. So I guess looks like we're going to be running out of time here, Scott. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. It's been fun.
It has been fun.
I want to thank our callers. They were great. And I would like to tell you that coming up next week on Hometown Alaska, Title 21 and the Whys Behind the Rewrite with Kathleen McCoy. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Speck engineered today's program. You can join us on Facebook and Twitter at Alaska Public. Also, make sure to check out our new website, alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter Dunlap-Scholl.
Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.